Dave. And what's your name?
Bernadette.
You're a member now?
Yes.
Well, welcome, Bernadette.
Well, Bernadette is Commissioner Birdie's appointee. However, it has not gone to the board yet since he just recently made his selection. So while we know that she will be on the board officially, not until the commissioners.
You can certainly participate. What's your last name?
DePiero.
DePiero, okay. DePiero.
Correct.
You're kidding me.
You got it right.
I get an A. I'm from India. So, all right, so roll call is here. And I want to introduce the staff.
Betty Mishu, I'm the staff person for the LCAS committee.
Rachel Goss for staff.
Crystal Windheim.
She is our newest member of the LCAS crew.
Wonderful.
So now we have two full-time support people, whereas before we only had one and a half. So
wonderful.
This is a wonderful addition.
For licensing and a lot of other things, huh?
Yes.
That's the key.
So what's your position?
Office assistant, so I'll be doing licensing and compliance.
Yeah. It's really important.
Yes.
That's where vital revenue comes from. Mm-hmm. Plus, a license is a free call home for a dog without a dime. Right? Mm-hmm. All right, so Molly, Craig, do you want to take 30 minutes?
Yeah. I don't even take 3 minutes, actually. I just want to thank everybody for approving the money for the yards. We desperately need them. There's no way to run the dogs. There's just the dogs can't run right now. And if we get those yards in, the guys who really need to run, those big guys that we get in, will be able to run. So I just want to thank you, and the sooner we can get those up, the better for those guys.
When's it scheduled to be installed?
I honestly don't know. I guess it's going through the...
So, Chair, as you're very aware, we go through a supplemental budget process.
Didn't the board authorize it?
The board does. However, the second part of that process is we have to go through a supplemental process to move the money from operational reserves to materials and services. So we'll accomplish that through supplemental number 2.
When's that happen?
I think it is next month.
Can't that be expedited? I mean, it's going to start raining.
Well, let's go through them. Regular meetings, doesn't it? Commissioner meetings?
Well,
no,
it's already done that. So it got approval, but we have a 2-step process for moving money. So while the board can approve it, they don't have the necessary authorization to move the actual money from reserves to materials and services. We accomplished that through a public hearing and a...
What?
Yeah. So, but I was going to say, Katie, you and I can discuss that afterwards because I already have some funds within materials and services that we could go ahead and actually get started.
Nice.
But there's the little tiny piece of it that towards the last... I'll explain more to you, but I think you're good to actually start doing... working with your contractor to get it installed.
So is there always a possibility that this could be derailed through the public hearing?
No.
Highly unlikely. No. Highly unlikely.
Unlikely, but is it possible?
No, not really, unless it was a stupid appropriation or...
Well, unless, again, you're saying that it is possible.
Well, what I'm saying is the board has approved it, so the board's authorized it, so there would be no reason for it. It's just another step that it goes through for the financial authority to move funds between operational reserves, and that's budget law for us. Is that
well,
we have to
when did
that
the
process.
Board approve this?
September 24th.
So you're saying it could be theoretically 2 months or 60 days between the board authorization and the supplemental authorization?
Yeah, the supplemental is a separate process. And I'm just, frankly, I don't remember when it is. I suspect it's in the latter part of this month or the beginning of next. But I already have some funds within materials and services, so I'm saying, Katie, you could go ahead and get started.
So I have a question. In the future, if we find someone that wants to donate monies, mm-hmm. is there a way they can donate them to sidestep all this stuff?
Well, I don't
you know
think
I mean, it shouldn't be necessarily something that is appropriated that way when it was already very clearly stated as
right.
To what
I think it depends on the amount because again, we have to have so maybe not board approval, but...
Was this $25,000?
This was.
Okay. Well...
We couldn't just accept money without...
I mean, the process were, you know, we recommended something based on its merits is a good process. The logjam at the county bureaucracy, I don't know, I dare say if the county commissioners needed some millions immediately after some emergency, they could have
emergency.
They would have to emergency allocation or something like that.
Right, they would declare it an emergency.
And then, but you all came July?
Mm-hmm.
See, so... Theoretically, I don't know if we didn't have a quorum or something. David, once again, all right, well, anyway, it's on the way. Thank you. Hey, that's good. And Katie, you'll get together. All right, with Betty. So, are there any changes or additions to the agenda? Anyone have anything else to add? Okay. Did anyone actually listen to the audio minutes? We do miss the printed ones, just let the record state. Okay, so Betty, brief us on the advisory committee status.
Well, Katie James, as we are very welcome that she is the newest member of the committee, so that process is complete, so she's officially a member. Bernadette is Commissioner Burney's representative. That has to go to the board for approval, so I'll get that scheduled here shortly. That should go through on consent calendar. And you have one at-large.
To be filled?
To be filled. So the two applications that I have on file, I had sent to the committee for your perusal and consideration. That does not mean you need to select from those two. If you do not like those two, then it can go to an open posting. So it's up to this committee to decide.
Why wouldn't it be an open posting?
Well, because we have two applications on file. So if we already have two applications on file, I'm saying the board, the committee in its discretion, can choose from those two applications on file. And if neither one of them are agreeable, we can go to an open posting. Or we could just go to an open posting immediately, depending on the board's desire.
Well, I've looked at both applications. I'm ready to discuss it and make a decision today.
Do you know them personally? Can you vouch for them?
I can vouch for one of them. I know one personally. I don't know the other.
Well, weren't both of them here at the last meeting?
Yes, they were.
Right. And Linda in that?
Linda Kornhigh.
Linda was sitting here.
Right. And Janet Ayers.
Oh, and they gave their background.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've seen their...
And you've seen their applications.
Well, all right. Okay, so exportation information updates?
I'm ready to vote today.
On what?
On an at-large member.
On the what?
On an at-large member. May we discuss them?
Yeah, sure.
I think based on... I do know one of them personally, and that's Linda Kornhigh, but based on the applications... I would have to lean towards Linda. I think she has more qualifications than the other lady. They both seem to be nice ladies, but I think the qualifications are important.
Is Linda a dog breeder?
Yes, she is a dog breeder.
What breed?
AKC judge. Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. Been a breeder for, I don't know, a long time.
Anyone else have any comments about this?
I saw the two of them last time, and they both, exactly what David said, they seemed real nice. I'd kind of lean also towards her just from what I saw on paper.
And from what Betty sent out, Commissioner Berry recommended Linda Kornhigh.
Really?
You received this too, I believe.
We don't want to get too top-heavy with dog breeders, though.
I think we need to be top-heavy with
qualified applicants, right? Okay. So would the committee like to entertain a motion to have a vote on this now, or would you like to?
I'll make a motion to vote.
I will, too. We had the thing open for how many months, Betty? I mean, it was just...
We've had a large position open for years now.
Is there a second?
I second it.
All right. second that motion. And any other comments? All right, hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. So passes unanimously. Okie doke. Now, exportation information.
So, this means we're going to vote.
So, yeah, oh. This means you're going to vote.
You caught me. Okay. All right.
Should it be an open vote or a secret vote?
I actually checked on that because I thought the committee might like the discretion of having something similar to an executive session where you could vote in private. But I found out advisory committees are not allowed to have an executive session, so it is an open vote.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that I could not vote on this because I was not a board member at the time that...
But you are a board member now, so you can vote.
So, okay. Well, I'm up with Linda also.
All right, let's just vote then. Are we voting on Linda Kornheis, or are we just voting
show
to vote?
And both hand, show hands for each one. And how should we do it?
Well, I guess we could do that.
We want to show hands for Linda. We want
all
to
right,
show
there's
hands
two
for
candidates. Linda Kornheis and Janet Ayers.
Okay.
Someone move to make. We vote on one or what? All those in favor of Linda Kornheis, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. I guess I'll go. All right. So, and I guess she's. No, all that is a
recommendation
by us.
Commissioners.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And then it goes to the commissioners.
All right.
I would be very surprised, though, if the commissioners would vote against the committee's recommendation.
Okay. Exportation information updates. Dave?
I read a report from the USDA. I don't feel it's necessary for me to send it to you. I can if you like. It's 8 pages, and it's sort of pretty dry reading. I can tell you, in 2018, there were over 1 million dogs imported, and the USDA tracks dogs that come in for sale. For sale means either for sale, adoptions, or whatever. It's not normal, just pets coming in with the owner. And so there's a lot of dogs that are imported that they don't track. They estimate there were over 1 million dogs imported in 2018, and they gave permits for less than 3,000 of them, which is less than 3%, less than 0.28% of the total dogs imported, which is dry. You know, what's it mean except we know how many dogs are coming in approximately according to the USDA, and that's an estimate too.
Well, how do they know?
They don't track them all.
Yeah.
If they only know that 3,000 plus have permits.
Permits.
And they claim 1 million dogs or
over 1 million, 1.06. What they're claiming.
Million dogs. And where do they largely come from?
The report doesn't say that. I can send the report to the committee.
And there are
it's only 8 pages. And the main concern is, of course, disease. They're concerned with disease. They only track dogs that are coming from dogs that rabies is endemic in the country. If it's not endemic in the country, they don't track them when they're imported.
They don't
track them if they're coming from a country where...
So you don't have to approve that a dog's been vaccinated?
That they must have current documentation vaccinated.
Is the assumption that most of the 1,000,006 dogs that are imported do not have vaccination?
I think there's concern that that's the problem, but the report doesn't say that. How about I just send the report to the committee?
Thank you.
Because it's only 8 pages. It doesn't take too long to get through it, but it's a little dry reading, but I'll send it to you. And I can do that tonight.
What's the ultimate objective? You've been interested.
The objective is that we're concerned about disease coming in, and there's been a push to have the government track importations. And this is, I think, one of the steps the USDA has taken to begin that process. I think it's a process.
I think the
process of the state wanting, or the individual states under the USDA guidance wanting to supervise the rescue groups.
Right.
Because they know that
right.
a lot of animals come in.
Right. Fraudulent documentation.
Well, they're somewhat owned. Does that make sense? And so they don't always go under the figures that are imports. Does that make sense? Because
right.
they're kind of owned by rescue groups.
Right.
And they don't always get categorized the same.
And they're concerned.
For instance, if you have 50 dogs you want to get in from Mexico someplace, or Central America, Guatemala, or someplace, if you have the right rabies vaccination and you're a rescue group, they're your dogs, and you just bring them in. If you have the right, you need a health certificate, that's it. And so I think that that's, the question is that the health certificate does keep track of those that are legally brought in. Are there some that are brought in that aren't under that group? Well, who knows? I don't know the answer to that.
Well, there's concern that when you go to places like PetSmart and you see the dogs that have been brought in from rescues, they're all small breeds. Minpins, Chihuahuas, Toy Fox Terriers, and so forth. And if they're the supposedly the easier to adopt breeds. And so if they're the easier adopt breeds and they're coming from Southern California, why aren't they adopted down there? There's concern that they're being purposely bred in other countries like Mexico and smuggled across the border and then trafficked to the Northwest or the Northern states. That's the concern, and they're trying to get a handle on what is really happening. And
well,
there have been quite a few, and you can mention this, Dr. Elaborate if you want, about fraudulent documentation, like checking to see the vet that the documentation came from in Southern California, and there's no vet in that by that name in that area.
But these dogs are finding homes, right?
Well, yes, they're finding homes.
The thing that really actually has been a surprise over the last couple of years is we're not sure rescue dogs are rescue dogs.
Right.
If they can sell them for $400 to $600 a piece, that's incentive enough for some people. Some rescue groups are great groups. I mean,
yes.
There's no question
Absolutely.
About it. Then there's other rescue groups that are a little bit less so, okay? And those puppies all look like the same puppies that came in last year and the year before. And you go, I'm not sure that all these rescue groups actually rescued them from Fresno or whatever city and brought them up here. And if they did, were they planned breedings for that group? Does that make sense? Because
mm-hmm.
there's actually a monetary gain. If you can breed a dog and get, let's say, $200 for a puppy, they have six or eight puppies, that pays for the dog's food and their keep, and the next people put $200 on it. I mean, is that far-fetched? That's as much as breeders, these so-called puppy mills used to get for the same thing. But I'll guarantee you that 90% of the puppies I see on a daily basis are rescue pups.
We have one. We adopted one from PetSmart in February, I think it is. She ain't no tiny dog, but she's 54 pounds, and she's wonderful. And it was from Lucky Paws or something, and it was from a California Last Chance or something like that.
But
she's a phenomenally good
dog. You understand, though, this is a play on emotion.
Yeah.
Seriously, it's a play on emotion that people want to rescue. Every person naturally wants to rescue a dog. You're almost more likely to adopt a rescue dog than you would a purebred or a
Absolutely.
Locally bred dog, right?
Yeah.
Because you feel like you're saving the world as well as saving the dog. And so it's a little bit of ploy on emotion that I'm worried that it's somewhat fraudulent.
If the dogs are born here, though,
What's
and
that?
If the dogs are born locally and they're in need of rescue, that's a good thing, right?
I'm not sure it's ever a bad thing. I am simply saying years ago you just adopted a puppy from the registered guard.
Yeah.
Now the registered guard doesn't even count, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
you were basically maybe rescuing that dog, but you never felt like it was a rescue. It was just a private adoption. Now everything is rescue.
Yeah.
Okay. and it's because the rescue name somehow satisfies an inner need for most people.
Now, in terms of just basic data, euthanasias are down, are they, in Lane County?
I would say overall, yes.
Yes.
Very much so.
And spay and neuters are up.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And
The reason why they can import is because we've been successful in the North, across the nation, in doing that.
Doing, yeah.
The shelters don't have as much intake as they used to, because we've been successful in the spay-neuter programs and so forth. And it's made a huge difference. And so therefore, we're looking at room at the inn. 30 years ago, there wasn't room. 30 years ago, the rescues wouldn't be able to do what they're doing today.
12 years ago, there wasn't.
Probably, yeah.
You know, they euthanized the space at it.
Sure.
Outcasts.
I can give you an example of, for the last several years, we've done, I guess you'd call them rescue kittens, you know. Well, years ago, you put a kitten in the paper saying, you know, free to a good home, you know, or kitten package at half price to adopt this kitten, and you might have 30 more kittens on your doorstep in the morning. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And now people see on Facebook that you've got kittens, and they kind of, there's a list. I mean, we have a list of like 30 long of people wanting kittens if we happen to have them. Okay? Well, we never had anything like that in the past. You know what I mean? And so there's a difference in the whole picture of
you know, one thing I've been seeing that's disturbing, I've been seeing lots of lost dog and lost cat signs with pictures and all that. What the hell's that about? Why? I mean, why would
people
that...
People aren't as likely to return them if they got a home. They just leave them where they're at, you know. No, that's why they should chip them. That's another word for chipping.
Yeah, that's true.
That, you know, say, hey, it's a way home even when they don't always get returned, you know, because if we have a lost pet, we chip them before we do anything.
Do you insist, as gently and diplomatically as you can, that your clients have their companion animals chipped?
Yeah. We say if you want to have them returned when they're outside of our county, you have to have a chip, because there's no way that somebody in, you know, Ontario, Oregon, is going to know anything about something in Eugene. And if they get out of the state, there's no chance. If they have a chip, you know, they just call that number and we can get them back. But it's not going to happen.
I mean, you have heard of some incredibly good stories of some cat or some dog from Walmart out here winding up in Mississippi and on a truck or something. You know,
cat get into somebody's car.
Yeah.
Well, what
got
happens?
Got himself a trip.
What happens? And it's inadvertent, but we live in a society that everything has to be delivered. Instead of going to the store to buy a toothbrush, you'll call Amazon and they deliver your toothbrush. And we, of course, are socially conscious of the gas we burn taking that. You don't have to get me going on this. You know, we are not friendly to the earth the way we deliver packages. My wife wanted eyelashes, and she got one in one day and one in two days in a box this big, filled with all kinds of blow-up crap. And that thing, you could have sent in an envelope years ago. It would have cost you 5 cents if you had a postcard. You could have taped it to a postcard.
You're going to start doing it with drones, which is a terrible idea.
But anyway, you know, I mean, that's the sort of thing that the cat, I'm going back to my original thought, my cat jumps in those damn delivery trucks every time they come.
So here's the last one we got.
He's a hitchhiker. He's in that thing. He wants to know what's inside that truck.
Right.
Well, you got more packages than just the one you put out there.
It has the box trap in there.
Oh, you know, it's horrible, and I have to kind of stop them and say, wait, did you check to see if my cat's in there?
We warn people not to leave their doors open when they come to our house.
Oh, yeah. Because
that's how we got
and
our
so
last cat.
These are silly little things, but if you want to get them chipped, you just have to tell your own personal story about how your cat's a hitchhiker. Every cat's a hitchhiker if it's given half a chance.
Okay? Is there some upsurge in really potentially catastrophic dog diseases that's happening as a result of this 1.06 million
I don't know that we know yet, okay? I do know that there are some diseases that are potential, okay, that are from those areas. Some of those are already here. All your rickettsial bloodborne diseases, you know, your leishmaniasis, and all those are in southern climes. And there's the problem we get into is not only is it a disease, but it's not a disease that we would expect to see, and so we call it a kangaroo. You're not looking for a kangaroo in downtown Eugene, you know. You're looking for parvo, for lepto, maybe, for...
Do you have heartworm here?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Not high, but significant enough to be aware of.
So I lived in Virginia for a while.
Well, then you know what heartworm is.
Well, you had to.
Yeah. Dogs in a southern clime can't even survive the year without having some
really?
Heartworm treatment.
Really?
Well, they're just, the mosquitoes are endemic with the heartworm bug, you know.
We give them heart guard or something like that.
Yeah, any of the mectin products will destroy them. But I mean, there's diseases that occur in certain areas that we don't expect to see here. Now, we'd expect to see heartworm, but we wouldn't expect some of the other diseases that are far less likely.
Which means they might get misdiagnosed, is that correct?
That's correct. That's the biggest problem.
That's the danger.
But from time to time, you have encountered some of these bizarre diseases. Do you report this to the state veterinarian?
Yeah, you have a little card you're supposed to report.
And you do that. Well, okay, well, thanks for keeping us abreast of this.
I'll send that out tonight.
You know, the question is, you know, seems like you've been interested in this a long time. And
been concerned about it for a long time.
It ultimately, would your dream regulation be outlawing the importation or severely limiting it, mandating a quarantine and demonstration of vaccination?
None of the above.
Okay, so what's your goal?
It would be to track, to know the disposition of all imported dogs. In other words, where it came from, how old it is, and where it goes, and so forth. It's like the dog several years ago that I don't remember the dog's name, was a pit bull that had a history of biting that was adopted by a rescue group. And I viewed the video online, and I also went to Alcara at the time and looked at the dog, and I can train a dog. I made my living in the ring with competition successfully. Mm-hmm. And I would not have gone into the cage with that dog. I didn't trust what I saw. And when I saw the trainer online working with the dog, it looked to me like the trainer was inept, to be honest. And the dog was put in another home. My opinion is that other home ever going to be around children?
Jesus.
I wanted the dog tracked. I wanted to know the disposition of the dog. And eventually the rescue said, "We're done with you. We're not going to give you any more information." I have no idea what
said that to you,
to us at this meeting.
What rescue group is that?
I don't remember the name of the group.
Local?
I'd have to look. Yeah, I'd have to look.
All right.
Anyway, as far as I know, the dog. I have no idea whether the dog was successful, whether it's ever hurt anybody or not. But in my opinion, it was.
What breed was this? A Staffordshire?
Track that was eventually going to hurt someone.
What breed was this?
It was a pit bull. Of course, you know, what's a pit bull? Mm-hmm. You know, it looks like.
A mix.
Yeah, it's some kind of a mix.
What they call them, Staffordshire?
A Staffordshire Terrier is an AKC recognized breed, and a pit bull tends to look like a staff.
Oh. Yeah.
I'm sure there's a relationship between the two, but, you know, how many breeds go into making a pit bull? What's a pit bull? It just looks like something. It looks like a staff, that's all.
Well, it's interesting. Thanks for...
But those breeds were bred to kill. And I know enough about genetics that if ever the light bulb comes on and the dog tastes blood or whatever, you're not going to turn it off.
And
that's my concern.
Yeah, my
However, concern. They were also bred to be very good with people and very good with children. And
but
so many of them make very good pets.
But to kill other dogs?
They were bred to be thrown in a pit and fight, just like a fighting rooster. That's what they're bred for. And genetically, you know that that's up there. And so that's my concern with them. I don't think they should be outlawed. Some people pass breed-specific legislation where they outlaw them. I don't think that should happen because it's an owner problem, not a dog problem. I can control one of those dogs. You might not be able to.
I definitely would not be able to.
Could I add two sentences?
Yes.
If we could back up, you know, you can't do a test for some diseases. And so if there's no way to determine whether they're carriers of a disease or not, until we have the test kit that would allow us to know whether they're a safe patient to bring in, it probably would be best not to import dogs from areas that have known diseases that could potentially endanger our entire pet industry. And you have to understand, when I started practice, we didn't even have a feline leukemia test. You know, just cats died all the time from anemias and from all these weird things. But there was no test kit. So until you have a test kit that allows you to know whether they're carriers of a given disease, it'd almost be better if they not be let freely roam in a... It's like the American population, the Native American population, had no defense against measles. We really had no business coming here until we made sure we weren't carrying that virus to this country, because we killed people by coming here, okay? Well, that's the same sort of thing you get in the industry with animals, is that if you have a vulnerable population here and they don't have a disease, and you have a disease-ridden population over here, you are potentially endangering that entire population. If there's not a way to test those and say, okay, these are all free, and so they should be able to come in, these can't come in because they're already infected. Does that make sense?
So a good analogy. Would you recommend a quarantine from those areas?
Get enough money and research to have a test kit that tells you who is and isn't infected.
Okay.
But until then, it's better not to ship in patients, you know. Now, rabies is not the same way. Rabies is a virus, and there is a vaccine for it. And so once those pets are vaccinated, then they're safe to come here, okay?
But still, there's a period of time that it might not show that it has rabies.
Pre-patient time period, yes. There,
6 months or something like that, possible?
Yeah, because the virus travels along the nerve pathways as opposed to in the blood, and so it's a longer path. It's a longer incubation period.
The incubation can be up to 6 months?
Mm-hmm.
Or shorter.
But there is a time period that they would that they'd say, okay, vaccinate, wait 8 weeks or 12 weeks or whatever, and then they're free to come. Okay? That makes sense.
So there are vaccinations for these diseases, but
No. I was giving just rabies as an example. That's a viral disease. A lot of the other things we're talking about are rickettsials, they're organisms, they're totally different things.
So are some of these potentially deadly? Some of these diseases that come in that we don't necessarily have a cure for or a remedy?
They can be deadly, yes.
Rabies.
Even if treated, they can be deadly. You know, a lot of your bloodborne parasites are tough to treat.
That we don't actually have
here. We don't even have them here now. So, yeah.
Well, deadly, are you talking humans or dogs? Or
sometimes cats? Sometimes both.
Well, the canine virus that came in 2015 from Asia killed some dogs. The old and the young, basically.
Vulnerable. We have a virus in horses right now that kills people. Eastern equine encephalitis has killed 3 or 4 people.
I was back in Massachusetts, and they were having them there. Connecticut, too.
But that's not as much as I'm talking about more common things, and that's blood.
But that's a mosquito.
All I'm saying is that you were saying it's free. You're not really trying to stop imports.
I'm saying
if there are known diseases in given areas that are not preventable in current medicine, and we have a test method of eliminating those dogs should be eliminated prior to coming here to save the population of healthy dogs.
I would obviously defer to what Dr. Penfold is telling us.
What's that?
I would obviously defer to what you're telling us.
Well, it's just something that to me makes sense.
Sure. Well, it does make sense, obviously.
And right now we have that in large animal a lot more than we do in the canine population.
Right. Well, in the past, this hasn't been an issue in the past. It's only been the past few years.
Because dogs didn't cross lines. The economic value and so on. Right.
Well, I think the bottom line is any real factual pattern or upsurge that would really trigger this at a national level or state level? You know,
to speak theoretically and
medically is interesting and relevant. But
what I've heard is the veterinary community, Dr. Penfold and others, say it's a big 18-wheeler coming down the freeway going to hit
really?
Us. However, does it have to hit us before we do something? Do people have to die before we do something? I don't think people should have to die before we do something, but that might be.
Or do we burn the village in order to save it? I mean, I don't know. Anyway, your concerns are warranted, and can you give us an update at the next meeting?
Sure, and I'll send
you an example, Dave, just so that you kind of understand when you talk about cross-species line. Try to ship pigs in China right now. It's not possible.
Right.
They have swine flu throughout all of Asia, and they frequently have chicken, not Marek's disease, that's a leukemia, but they have Khaleesi virus in chickens.
You mean we can't ship from China? Cannot ship?
You could not get a pig ship from China here if you tried.
But those animals stay alive in that country.
Say what?
Those animals live in that country.
Not in China. They're dying by millions.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, exactly.
They have a terrible epidemic. And pork is the big thing in
swine China. Fever is a huge thing. And that's just a virus in the swine population.
Wow.
But their chickens do too frequently. They'll have these huge epidemics of chicken.
What was that Hong Kong? What was that chicken China thing? I mean,
I was talking about another virus of chickens. It wasn't Newcastle, but it was something like Newcastle. But they get variants, and the reason is they got so many millions of chickens and pigs. Now, I haven't actually seen the agricultural production facilities, but they claim they're very concentrated in China. Very, very concentrated. So we think, you know, we have to have
free range,
and that would not be a consideration in China because they don't have the range, you know what I mean? So, and in doing that, it sets them up for more disease problems.
Well, I see the hour is getting late. It's 6:15, so...
It's 4:45.
I like your clock.
Okay, so number C is move to quarterly and evening meetings.
And that's a discussion item. I think Michael had touched on that our last meeting, and if it would be more convenient for the committee to have an evening meeting, we would pay for dinner, and that way it would allow people to, like, you know, for instance, like Dr. Penfold, to be able to complete his day and then come to an evening meeting. So it's for your consideration.
Well, I think Dr. Penfold's input is invaluable, and so we should, if it's better for
well,
him.
Well, I actually appreciate the 4 o'clock hour. That made a huge difference for me.
I think we should stick with four until we can fine tune it.
We can vote on quarterly right away and say.
No, I think that's also ill advised. I think we should decide for ourselves, based on just what we're hearing, whether you want to have a meeting 2 months hence or whatever. I mean, I think we don't have to do monthly meetings, do we?
No, you can elect to change your schedule. You can go to a quarterly meeting or every other month. Yeah, you can go to every other month.
Semi-annual. Annual. So, yeah, let's continue to focus on, other models. But it could, you know, for example, we don't meet every month.
Correct.
There's probably...
Well, when there is not a quorum coming down the track.
So that's inconvenience to certain people. But there are other times when we have elected not to, in the summer.
When we fill the committee, which apparently is going to happen, chances are the quorum issue probably won't be happening nearly as often.
So,
but for instance, next month, it falls on a holiday for the county. So I've made a note of that at the bottom of the agenda. So would you elect to try to just meet the month after that?
Oh, the building would be locked.
Mm-hmm.
Really locked.
Really locked, and no people would be here.
How do we make sure that this Green Hill thing is on track, though? In terms of the supplemental, if we don't meet next month, we can't track that. I mean, you can track it, or you can.
I can track it, and I'll send. I communicate with the committee outside just the meetings. I email, so we can do it that way.
I mean, it's going to start getting wet and rainy.
Is your contractor on board to start? Okay.
Yeah, that's why we're hoping that there is actually enough funds that you're talking about that we actually could start.
It's about $23,000 and something in materials and services. So that would be available for your use now. That's not the full 25.
That's fantastic.
You know, that's like great. 85-90%.
It is. But it depends on what your contractor wants to do. Do they require a deposit? Are they okay with just billing after the work is complete?
Because we're using the contractor that has done the huge remodel. So they're still out there. They're working on, they're starting on phase two as the funds come in. They're there. Our biggest challenge or the thing that could hold us up is the fencing, Oregon Fence. How far are they booked out? I doubt that once we say let's go, that they're going to go, we'll be there Monday.
Well, why don't you know that? All you have to do is ask them.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that I doubt that contractors are really busy right now. I mean, they're booked. Even though we're going into fall, I think, you know, because the weather's still holding, fencing companies, you know, they've scheduled out. So I'm hoping.
Why don't you just ask them?
Yeah, but I didn't want to jump the gun if we didn't know when
but apparently the gun is.
Yeah, so I will send an email out to the entire committee, and I will say this is how many funds are available now for use, and when supplemental two for the last little bit will be ready.
Did you get a competitive bid on this?
Yes.
Okay. And are these?
Yeah, we had three bids. We had three bids, and
these guys are the cheapest and the most convenient and the best.
Well, all above. All right. But the big thing is that they are a part of the person that's going to oversee it is the project manager. From McKinsey Commercial, who did the huge project in Green Hill. So he has intimate knowledge of it's going to be over a drain field. He has intimate knowledge of all of this. We couldn't be with a better person.
Well, Betty, that's fantastic news.
Yeah.
And you just keep in touch with each other and make it happen.
Scott, if you're not aware of this, most contracting is out 6-10 weeks right now.
Yeah.
And I don't care who you are. When I'm trying to get a surveyor to just survey a small property, and he said it might be 6 months.
Wow. Jeez.
Wow.
Yeah. So the economy is probably as hot as it's ever been, and the workforce is as short as it's ever been.
Right.
Hmm. I could use 2 or 3 veterinarians and maybe 10 staff.
Really?
Wow.
Tomorrow.
Really?
Wow.
Well, Katie,
we'll talk after.
Yeah, I was going to say, get a hold of McKinsey and your Oregon Fence and see what they can, what their timeline is.
Is that Island Fence?
No, Oregon. No. Oregon Fence.
What about 99? Or is that a different?
Are you thinking of Iron Works?
But McKinsey Commercial would actually be doing the installation. Is that? Are they doing the actual installation of the fencing?
What's going to happen is McKinsey Commercial is going to oversee Oregon Fence. So, right. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. And Oregon Fence is the company that did all the fencing at Green Hill. And they're actually still working out there at this point. So, yeah.
All right.
But I would like to spend a few minutes with you once we get you.
I can't understand why Green Hill wouldn't have budgeted for something as elemental as dog runs.
They did. However, funding did not come in the way they anticipated, and I'm sure Sasha could really address that much better than me. But so they have had to break it down into phases. And so some things have had to wait.
But this is a priority, isn't it, for the health of these dogs?
We think it is.
Okay. You guys will, you ladies. Green Hill activity, well, Sasha's not here. We've already discussed the status of this. So anything else that comes to mind?
So are we just staying with 4 o'clock meetings?
I would recommend that. For the time being.
Okay.
Per Dr. Penfold's recommendation.
It's better than it was.
All right. And we can address...
Would something else be even better?
What's that?
Would something else be even better?
Well, anything outside of work hours would be better, but that's okay. I'm always willing to compromise.
All right.
What I think is we need to maintain our flexibility. I'm fine with having every other month, subject to the call of the committee or the chairs or whatever.
We can always call a special meeting if we need to the next mm-hmm. month. I mean, that's
or call a regular meeting
yeah.
that we haven't scheduled. But right. let's just leave it the way it is. And
so
let's
we're going to kind of go every other month then?
No.
Oh.
Well, but we are, in fact, we are the next month.
Right.
Because so our next month will be in December. So
falls on Veterans Day.
For all intents and purposes, you're half right.
And, so there is not a meeting in November?
That's,
no.
That's
because the building's locked.
And Scott, they're on...
That's
they're
why
on,
I said I'm willing to compromise.
Okay.
And Bernadette, the meetings are always the second Monday of the month.
Except for last month.
Lane County Animal Service activity. You care to tell us, you have a new staff person then?
We do have a new staff person, which we're very fortunate to have, because her focus will be on licensing and compliance. So that increases our revenue.
Did you get a full-time FTE? Or?
Yes, we did. We were able to get a full-time FTE.
I thought maybe we should actually talk to her a little more. Sometime meeting down the road, we might have to talk to her a little more, because you know how strong we feel about maybe license enforcement stuff.
Oh, definitely.
She would be in a position to know that she has, we have her back. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
We send out so many, you know, notices that, you know, you need to get your license, renew your license. I mean, we send out lots of notices, and we're trying to look at ways to automate some of that process, not to get out of providing good customer service. But we do have a courtesy phone call, for instance, and we're looking at going to somewhat of an automated, you know, courtesy call. But then we always have a formal contact, you know, by a staff person as well. So, I mean, we're looking.
You know,
at
the only thing
options.
Is in our report when we talked about processing licenses in the task force report, the last option was pet data. Everything else was to do it in house or whatever. Well, the city of Eugene, when they broke the contract, outsourced almost everything. They parked it in the police department, which the county had tried to get away from because of the image of the dog catcher and animal control people, you know, meeting quotas and laying wait for dogs off leash and stuff. Remember?
Yeah.
So the whole county trend was don't give it a police kind of connotation. Anyway, the city did all that, and they've outsourced virtually everything except a few staff people, and my case, for example, you know, we did get a reminder from Texas, hey, Holly needs to get a license and remit your payment to Texas. Well, I mean, that's just the logical extension of making everything automated.
Well, we don't want to make everything automated, and this is not outsourcing. This is a off-the-shelf piece of software that we're going to use just for that initial courtesy call.
By the way, have you thought of asking the county and the assessor, who always says it's not possible, but it is, to somehow include in the tax statement, the annual tax statement, some reference to the requirement to license your dogs mm-hmm. and a website or something mm-hmm. from which with which you do that.
I believe that we did approach that, and
but
we were
rebuffed.
We have
a majority now on the board. We have a majority on the board, and when I was on the budget committee, the assessor just said, "Oh no, we can't do this." And you know, the best thing she said was, I think you should just send a first-class letter to the every taxpayer. I said, well, how many taxpayers are there? Oh, 20-something thousand. So when it got to budget time for the assessor, I said, and I think Commissioner Dwyer said, well, you know, the assessor had a very good idea that maybe in lieu of inserting this into the tax statement, we could send first class letters. And I would think that it would be appropriate to withdraw from the proposed assessment for the assessor, that we divert this. And oh, she agreed to insert it into the billing. The lesson in that is if you can count to three, mm-hmm. you can get something done.
Well, we were, I seem to recall that had been approached before, and I think we were, you know, denied. But that's not to say we can't ask again.
Sorry. And that's something.
So the thing that you're talking about with Eugene, we don't have any control or say so. But the police department of Eugene does not want dog control in their budget. They would do anything to get rid of it. It's a disaster for them.
Exactly.
It's a total disaster. They're paying $40,000 a month to Greenhill. And they don't want it in their budget at all because it just makes them look ridiculous, you know. And it's true. I mean, I know. I talk to the people on the budget situation all the time.
With the Eugene police?
They would do anything to dump dog control if they could get away with it.
You know my feeling on it. It's just outrageous. The county was, in essence, subsidizing the city in a good way. And, you know, we had like four people dedicated to licensing, managing for the city, generating revenue for the city, doing all the city's work. And they've stripped it down. And, you know, okay, here, Greenhill, you can do this. And, you know.
It's all about control. Every little fiefdom.
And money. It's about money.
About money.
I mean, you know, it whatever. Anyway, so we are where we are. Is there anything else about LCAS activity that, hi, how are you? That we need to know, Betty?
No, nothing okay. Out of the ordinary.
I have one question. Is there a way to find out through genetic testing what your dog is?
Yeah.
I mean, like half of this and half of that?
Yeah. Swab, muckle swab.
Do you provide that service?
No, you have to do it online.
Janice, are you leaving?
Sorry, I have a conference call.
Oh, okay. All right, thanks for coming.
It's an online thing you can look up. I mean, it's not done through VeterHelp.
The AKC has a program for high volume breeders. I don't remember how many litters the breeder has to do, has to have per year to qualify for that. But they will send the swabs to the breeder and have you swab the sire and the dam and the sire if it's on property. If the sire is somewhere else, like in New York, they hopefully have that. And they determine whether that dog is actually out of that sire and dam.
Wow.
It's not for the breed, but for the
genealogy
of the registry.
Provenance.
Well, that's because you get accidental breeding sometimes, and you want to know which.
Well, it was because there were so many puppy mills in the AKC, they finally came up with the DNA program, which drove the puppy mills out because they couldn't comply because they just let them all run together, and they ended up with their own registries, which are not worth the paper they're written on.
Well, when we adopted Holly, they said, "Oh, she's all black. She's a beautiful dog." Ears, looks like a shepherd. They said, oh, she's part shepherd, part lab. But I know a friend of mine has had labs, so I don't see any labs. Well, I don't know. She's always with a shoe or a toy or anything she can find.
Well, she's black.
Yeah, and she's fetching, and she's ferocious at the door, which is good and bad. So there's a way I could find out?
Yeah.
Cool. All right, so we're towards the end of this. Are there any other items for next month's agenda that we can think? Not next month's, but December's agenda.
Yeah, it would be December.
And that'll be December what?
It would be the second Monday.
December 9th.
So the 9th.
Okay. Well, hearing no other ideas.
I have one if I could ask from the audience.
Sure. What is your name?
Janet Ayers.
Okay.
I applied to be a member of the board, and I'm still requesting from appointee Bernie a position on the board.
I have a concern and keen interest in the feline policies with domestic pets, and of late I've read a couple of editorials in the paper with the concern about free-roaming cats and the killing of birds, and it seems a little off balance with domesticated pets usually being a cat or a dog and or a dog. And my concern is this, that it's gotten to a point where we're reading more or seeing more in the news of folks hoarding cats, 400 cats or more. And I'd like to see a more balanced approach to cat owners and dog owners and the accountability, responsibility of allowing their animals to roam at large. I'd like to see this council, this county, take up some action to create a more balanced approach in dealing with cat ownership, both in the suburban and urban areas, because of the issues that are coming up more and more in the paper.
I did some research some time ago with Scott on the committee some time ago about licensing, and I came to Calgary, Alberta, which had cat licenses. They licensed cats.
Mandatory or optional?
Mandatory.
Yeah. Madison, Wisconsin, too, I think.
And they didn't allow cats to roam up there.
Thank you.
However, that would be a tough sell here. I could support it.
I don't think
it would be passed, but I would support something like that based on the Calgary model. Apparently, they had something like 60% what they felt compliance on cat licensing, which is phenomenal.
Surrounding my mother's home, 91 years of age, she has no pets, nor does she desire any. But the three houses, one across the street, one on each side, a total of 11 cats, and guess where they poop?
Yeah.
See the
and
problem.
Guess where they climb. Guess who can't do anything about it?
The biggest problem we have is this is a county committee.
Yes.
This isn't for the city.
Oh, I realize
the
that.
The city
she lives on
the county.
A street that's both
and
county.
We could pass something in the county, but you're talking about barn cats and things like that. It probably wouldn't fly for that reason.
River Road is both county and city. It's a mixed use, and I think the conversation needs to start somewhere. And usually it starts at the upper echelon, say state, down to county, down to city. Someone's got to initiate the action, because the onus is currently on dog owners, which I think it should not be a problem. If you own a pet, you need to be prepared to be accountable and responsible for that pet. And the rules and the policies of the county and city should reflect that. I don't think any domestic pet should get a free skate, both on licensing, chipping. Anything that's expected of a dog owner to do should certainly be in place for feline owners. And it may come to a point that we might have to include snakes and lizards and all that, but currently, by far and away, most domestic pets are dogs and cats.
You know, if you could do a little research as to model policies in the country, or
I could send the Calgary Code to the complete right. committee to look at
you
it.
Could, in the United States.
Yeah. And I'm kind of surprised that with the budget woes that this committee, that the licensures of CAP obtaining license is optional. It's mandatory as the dog owner, but entirely optional. I spoke with Mr. Johns a few weeks ago. He asked me, he says, with that policy in place, guess how many cat licenses we sold last year?
Who's Mr. Johns?
Michael Johns.
Oh, okay.
Zero. John. Zero, because it's not mandated. And most people, unless it's mandated, aren't going to flip out dollars. And I would like to suggest that the licensure of cats and dogs should be roughly equal to one another. That the incentivization for cat owners that have several cats in around their property or more seems to be falling more and more upon community-based efforts with little or no policy in place to maybe take a more punitive approach to those folks that have 400 cats.
Well, they are.
Yeah. And we all know that story, and it's becoming more, and we have a birding
400?
Issue.
That's a separate issue. Hoarding is a separate issue.
Yes, I know
and
that.
And there was, in Tufts University, Dr. Gary Petronik, who I've corresponded with, did a study on that. Mm-hmm. Now, he's a veterinarian, but he had health professionals on his committee to do the study. And I could send you the link to that on hoarding, but it's totally separate. And he came up with the idea there's different types of hoarders. There's a breeder hoarder, there's a rescue hoarder, and different reasons for hoarding.
I have a rental property, believe me, I know it's deemed a mental illness, and it's next to impossible to deal with it if you're a landlord tenant, so I get it.
It's a mental issue.
There's actually two separate problems there.
Right.
Yes.
The hoarding of the 400 cats that you might have heard of, had she not gotten old and been injured, she was actually feeding those cats, and actually the cats weren't in bad shape as people thought they were.
You wouldn't have known about it.
Huh?
You wouldn't have known about it.
You would have never known about it. She actually was feeding 400 cats. They were kind of confined to her space.
So are you endorsing that kind of pet?
I am not endorsing anything. I'm telling you that there's two different problems.
Yes.
Okay? The problem you're having is the catch, spay, and release program, and that's what Green Hill is all about. You're up against the local humane society.
That's a whole separate issue too.
No, but that's what your mother is dealing with. Okay, spay, catch, spay, and release is why you have a bunch of cats in your neighborhood.
Well, she's saying no, they're neighboring cats.
They caught them in. Okay, the hoarding of cats is not what your mother is
something I want to delve into. I'm just citing it as an exaggerated example of what cat ownership without the obligatory requirements of cat owners can develop
into. To some degree, that lady had a mental illness, but she was actually dealing with it to a reasonable degree. Where your policy, what I was telling you, the problem that you're talking about is a problem that's universal throughout the country, okay? And it's related to catch, spay, and release, because there is a belief that cats have the right to be free roaming animals in your neighborhood.
Not in an urban setting.
I'm telling you, that is what they believe. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Even in an urban setting.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's their basic premise.
Well,
okay?
There needs to be some balance.
I am just simply saying your problem is directly in opposition to the entire Humane Society of the United States.
Well, PETA actually takes a stance against the Humane Society on that. That they consider that inhumane to release them out, that they should have an owner of sorts. Why would that be any different if I had a dog and I found it and I called and had it neutered and just turned it loose? I would be deemed
because of the
a
current laws. Because of the current
yes,
laws
and
control
that's
those,
my
but
point.
They don't. Okay. I'm not disagreeing with you. I am simply telling you that what you're up against. Okay.
Also, you could talk about limit laws, but if you do some research about towns or communities that have limit laws, that have licensing and for cats, let us know about it.
Based on my experience, I'm going to attend every meeting until I see a shift in the direction of the county, and I'm going to be checking into the city because it's gotten completely out of hand. I'm finding more and more letters with free roaming cats and the bird populations going down, and there are concerned people that are writing editorials.
They're writing letters to the editor.
Just last week.
I saw them. All right.
Well, what you worry about is our personal cats are going to be shot by somebody that's pissed off because there are 30 cats trapped in their yard. You know what I mean? And that does happen. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I spoke with a woman that knows Ted Carlson, that her neighbor had over 40 cats, no garbage service, and with the assistance of the city and Ted Carlson, her yard was so
feces laden.
Yes, that they required that I believe it was a foot and a half of the entire surrounding areas removed and filled in with green soil. Now cats are teeming, just as any animal. When you have an over influx of any animal, You got to take care of the feces of the other, their claws are teeming with bacteria. If they don't have proper ownership and proper obligations with that, it becomes a community-wide issue, if not health risk. So that's my position on this, and I'm going to attend every meeting. I may be fighting an uphill battle, but I'm hoping I have the council's support.
We're going to have to adjourn right now. But I will say this. The lion's share of cats and dogs in Lane County are in the two major metropolitan areas. Not enough citizen input has been given to the city council. And they have open public citizen comments at the outset of every meeting. And I would urge you, and if you have some allies as well, to be a pain in the neck with respect to educating them about this. Because there are letters to the editor, but if you could get back sometime in the next 6 months to us about model statutes in other towns and other states and other counties, limit laws. Look, how about if there was a limit law, like you couldn't have more than four cats?
I know of no policy or practice that the onerous is given on one side of a ticket and nothing on the other. And we're talking domesticated pets. Let's just put them all together. Dogs and cats are commonly known as domesticated cats. If a cat is being caught, neutered, and turned out, released, they're actually perpetuating the problem. All animals, pets, domesticated pets, deserve an owner and someone responsible enough to see to it that they're fed, not neglected, abused, and becoming a neighborhood nuisance. That is the bottom line of my coming here.
You know what?
I have a suggestion.
Look, I want to adjourn this. Go ahead.
I would suggest that I send you the Calgary Code, complete Calgary Code, and I'll send it to the committee as well, and point out what to look at, so you don't have to go through the whole code if you don't want to. And I think I should also send you the hoarding consortium findings of Dr.
That's not my chief concern. I just use that as an illustrative purpose. I understand that it is a mental illness.
It's a little different.
But, however, a preventative measure such as putting in place policy and codification as they do on dogs would certainly be, I would say, a pretty strong inhibitor.
It wouldn't stop the hoarding issues. That's why you need to read that too.
But at least it would be a ticketable offense and there would be revenue available to get into the county.
You have to convince the judges, when the judges get a hoarding case, all they do,
okay,
all the judges...
I don't want to kill them.
All right.
Yes.
Hold it.
All the judges tend to do is...
You're out of order, Mr.
I move that we adjourn.
Now, and as before we vote, at our December meeting, we'll have an agenda item about the origin of the feast. No, the cat issue.
Yes, thank you.
And we thank you for bringing it to our attention and being so focused on it.
Yes.
And our next meeting is in December. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I have my motion.
Is there a second? All those in favor signify by saying. Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.